Introduce yourselves, please.
Hi, I'm Barb Shelley. I write for the opinion page of the Kansas City Star.
I'm Steve Vakrat. I'm a staff writer for The Pitch.
My name's Ellie Moxley. I'm a reporter here at KCUR.
All right. I think I'm going to like this. Roll the open. This is Statehouse Blend. I'm Sam Zeff. We're using coffee and donuts to help us better understand the historic legislative session underway in Topeka. The issues and the people in the Kansas legislature. Here we go. All right, we diverge a bit from our format this week. Instead of getting to know a Kansas legislature, we're going to get and try to get and figure out just what the heck has gone on in the session so far. Lawmakers are on spring break. They're going to come back near the end of the month. They got a huge budget problem to figure out. And so I want to start with the holiday season in mind. I'd like to know why this session is different from all other sessions. Barb Shelley.
Okay, that's a good question, because lately almost every Kansas legislative session has been somewhat unique in its own way. But, I was in Topeka this week. I had a chance to go up there and talk to some people and have been watching it pretty closely from the beginning. And I think what you see is that big conservative majority in the legislature really flexing its muscle in a way that perhaps we haven't seen before. And they're doing something that's really quite unusual, which is they're rushing through very monumental, ground-changing legislation without a whole lot of debate, and in fact, without even allowing one house or the other to really debate it on the floor and vote on it. And if I can just summarize quickly three things they've done this with. One is the budget. What I hear is that the House leaders don't want the budget debated on the floor because of the off chance, or perhaps not so off chance, that a Medicaid expansion amendment will slip through. So instead of allowing a House debate, they took a bill that came out of committee and sent that to conference committee, thereby only 23 members of the House that sat on the House Appropriations Committee got to debate the budget thus far. You saw the same thing with the big school finance change. Mm-hmm. The Senate didn't get to debate that bill.
Right. They just took the House bill.
They just took the House bill and pushed it through. And a similar thing happened with the welfare reform bill that passed this week. The House did not have a chance to debate that on the floor either. So really big things being rushed through without a debate of the full legislature.
Yeah. Steve, why is this session different from all other sessions?
Well, I think many of the issues are fairly similar. I mean, at least since like 2007, it's always been budget in large measure, and school finance and things like that. I think one of the biggest differences that I've noticed in the tenor of the discussion centers around schools. And of course, they're going with this new school finance formula for a couple years before they craft something different, repealing the one that's been in place since 1992. And, you know, the last time I was on this show, we had Jeff Melcher in. And I felt like that conversation is emblematic of a subtle but distinct change in the conversation with how the legislature is talking about education. There's always been factions in the legislature who've said the schools have more than enough money. But you didn't hear that coming out of Johnson County as much as I think you're starting to see now. You've got some legislators for sure, like Melissa Rooker, who are protective of school finance. But, you know, with like Mr. Melcher and some others in the Johnson County delegation, where education's always been sort of the bedrock of the community, you're starting to hear legislators from Johnson County saying as well that schools have plenty of money. They're just not routing it the right ways. There's administrators who make too much money. And I think that's been a pretty distinct change in the way we talk about school finance this session.
Yeah. Ellie Moxley, the question for you is, how is the Kansas legislature different from other state legislatures that you've covered?
My background is I came from Indiana about a year ago, where I covered the state house and extensively education policy. And I actually think that what you're seeing in Kansas is very similar to what you're seeing in other states, where you have a same party governor, super majorities in both houses. That's what's happening in Indiana right now. Republican governor, Republican majority. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things where you don't see, just like Barb was saying, you don't see the kind of debate. I think one of the things that could happen in the future with Kansas, knowing what I've seen in other states, is I think you could really start seeing factions within the Republican Party starting to kind of separate from the majority and start kind of having some kind of, you know, their own debate around issues. That's definitely what we've seen in Indiana. I think one of the things to definitely keep in mind right now is, you know, it definitely does kind of stifle the conversation around some of these things. It's harder for someone who has a majority viewpoint in Kansas right now to get their kind of point heard and kind of get their feelings on these issues on the floor. And it kind of makes the process a little less transparent for those of us that cover it and for people who follow things coming out of the state house.
I want to, the factionalization that we've talked about, and we've seen it with here. You mentioned Melissa Rooker. There are a lot, not nearly as many as there used to be, but there's still a fairly significant number of moderate Republicans. They've blocked a couple of education bills. They wanted to drastically change the Professional Negotiations Act. Democrats and moderate Republicans rose up to defeat that. So I guess my question here is, since we've seen this, how they've broken down into factions, this has been happening for some time, how is that going to play going forward, because they still have to figure out this budget. That's the biggest thing. They haven't figured that out. So how does that factionalization play out as they come back to try to fix this budget problem?
Well, that's the funny thing, because you actually haven't heard a whole lot of talk about the budget yet. It's all been kind of done in committees and things, and you know, that's the big thing they have to take care of when they come back from break. You know, there's a new consensus revenue forecast coming out in late April, and they're kind of waiting to see what that looks like. But, you know, I think people there in Topeka are saying that they don't expect the numbers to look better after that comes out. In fact, they expect the gap to be even bigger than the approximate $600 million that they know they have to make up now.
Right.
So
this should be clear, that's for the coming fiscal year.
Yes.
For 15-16, which starts in July 1st.
Yeah, right. And I think there's some worry about having to make even some more cuts in this current fiscal year.
Who mentioned Medicaid expansion?
I did.
Right.
Yeah.
So the fear is not so much what Democrats are going to do on the House floor with that. It's what moderate Republicans are going to do with a possible Medicaid expansion amendment, correct? Am I right about that?
Yeah, Medicaid expansion is going to be one of those issues that's going to test the factionalization that we've talked about on particularly on the Republican side. But the other thing, too, is as it relates to the larger budget issue, there's some talk about, you know, do we increase sales tax statewide? The governor has made some somewhat oblique comments about being open to that possibility. And that's really going to test a lot of lawmakers, particularly on the Republican side, because you have a lot of folks who got into office on the promise, you know, we will not raise taxes. And they're not even palatable for the idea of consumption taxes, you know, the smaller consumption taxes like tobacco and alcohol.
Right. Brownback held a rare news conference. I never thought in my life I'd be hearing about rare news conferences from Kansas governors. But he did have a news conference this week. And I want to play how KPR's Stephen Caranda reported the story. Come back to it on the other side.
When the state passed the first round of tax cuts a few years ago, the bill eliminated income taxes for thousands of Kansas businesses. Brownback says that was the right move.
I don't want to go back on the small business tax, where we've gone to zero taxes on small business, because that's worked well on job creation in the state.
But he's willing to cancel scheduled future income tax cuts for individuals.
I think we're in a situation where we need to have some stability on these 2 years.
Brownback has also proposed raising alcohol and tobacco taxes to help balance the budget. Lawmakers are waiting until after their spring break when they'll have updated revenue projections to finish their tax and budget work. I'm Stephen Caranda at the Kansas State House.
All right, Steve, let's finish your thought after we listen to the governor there. Is there a chance, and I want to go around the table for this, that we're going to see consumption tax, essentially sales tax, go up, or cigarette and alcohol tax? Are they going to go up?
Well, I think that's going to be the battle royale, one of a few battle royales in the remaining legislature. The thing about they like to call them sin taxes. They're always popular because it's like, well, if we're going to raise taxes on anything, let's raise them on things that either cause health issues or cause people to behave dangerously in some cases. So alcohol and cigarette taxes are frequently the target of this. The trouble with that is, you know, if you raise the tobacco tax, it's sort of you will get people who will smoke less because it becomes more expensive. So that revenue is not a predictable long-term fix, if you will. And so, you know, raising the sales taxes on just those two items alone strikes me as you know, some level of incrementalism in trying to patch some fairly large holes in state budgets.
Right. Well, I mean, there's no way, and they're still not sure how they're going to balance the budget in the current fiscal year. And Ellie, there is concern that if they don't, they're going to have to come back near the end when they come back and cut into public education funding. How damaging do you think that would be to public education in the state, given everything that they're looking at now, block grants and not knowing what the school formula might be like going forward?
I mean, I think one of the things to keep in mind, pretty much for any state, the biggest line item in a state's budget is public education. It's expensive to run schools. It's expensive to do all the things that are related to education. One of the real challenges with what they're doing with block grants, and obviously you know this, Sam, is the fact that schools don't really know year to year what their expenses are going to be. Their student populations change as kids age into and age out of the system, especially around special education and some of the big line items in schools' budgets that are expensive to deliver. I think the fear is from educators right now is that you'll have a situation like you did a few years ago where they have to make mid-year cuts, and that's a real challenge for schools. I mean, it's a challenge for any business. You think of your own personal finances. If you're planning to have, you know, your salary for a full year and all of a sudden, you know, 2 months before the end of that budget period, you get laid off or you're not bringing in as much revenue, everything has to change. And for a lot of schools, the dollars are already spent at that point.
Yeah. Now, the Republicans will argue that this is not really a cut. It's really a reduction of an increase that they gave to public education last year. So if we're just taking back a little bit of the money of the extra dough that we already gave you, what's the problem there, Barb?
Well, what's the problem is that, you know, that money's already spent in some cases, and you take it back, and that means probably, you know, cutting personnel and all that entails. You know, there's just no consensus in Topeka at all on how to raise the money to make this next year's budget work, or even this year's budget work. And, you know, there's just a lot of concern that even though Kansas has shown some good numbers with jobs and revenues lately, that that's not going to hold up. It's just going to be terrible. And I don't know anybody who thinks that this session will wrap up in May and probably go on and on and on. And then, you know, then they think there might be another session in July to address a constitutional crisis if the Supreme Court, tells them they have to throw out this block grant thing and put more money into education. And so, yeah, it's a very serious situation that I don't think you get the sense of just from the day-to-day goings on in Topeka.
Yeah, you know, you touched on this, and this is something that I felt for some time, and that is there is this huge budget issue. And up until the last couple weeks, we just haven't heard very much about it from the State House. And so
it's the elephant knocking around in the room.
Shouldn't we be yeah. hearing about it every day? I mean, where has the discussion mm-hmm. been? Have I missed it?
Well, I think at the outset of the session, there was quite a bit of discussion on that. That was the dominant issue. And now it seems like now that they're shifting gears on the school financing with the block grants, that's gotten, at least from what I can perceive, that's gotten most of the attention. But, you know, things that are going on in Topeka right now is, as we've talked about, is not exactly the paragon of transparency. I don't know that anyone's getting the most information that they should be out of this, out of the Capitol right now.
But all these measures, all these proposals to raise revenue, you know, there's going to be, you know, fierce opposition to every one of them. I mean, a lot of the legislators don't even want to raise the so-called sin taxes, and especially if you live near the border, you know, when already cigarettes are so low in Missouri, things like that. And, you know, I think you'll see huge opposition to any kind of increase in the sales tax. I mean, there's a considerable faction in the legislature that wants to lower the sales tax on food right now. I mean, it's just going to be bloody when they try to figure this out.
I mean, for me, it just seems like it feels like they left Topeka for their spring break, and they said, man, they're going to sashay back in here at the end of the month. And they're just, you know, and in a few days they're gonna put a bow on this budget and everything is gonna be fine. And that's exactly how the Republican leadership seems to be playing it.
I think they all left Topeka mad, to tell you the truth. I know a lot of people were angry when the session ended, and we'll come back angry too.
Angry about what?
What we talked about earlier about not being able to debate on the floor.
Oh, the transparency
on that
issue.
On that welfare
but
bill.
But
and
I'm saying the leadership, yeah. the chair of the Ways and Means Committee in both houses, Speaker, the Senate President. It's all sort of, you know, it's sort of a just don't worry. We've got this handled. Am I mistaken about that? Is that the impression they were trying to leave with us?
I think that's a pretty fair characterization of it. It's almost like observing Congress in some ways, where there's this feeling like it's going to come down very much to the wire, that between now and when the session ends, I don't know how much progress there's going to be on the budget. And there just has this feeling of this last minute rush in the last couple of days of the legislature to get this thing done.
I think they had hoped to have at least the spending part of the budget wrapped up before they went on break. But even that fell apart, I'm told, on the issue of university funding and whether to freeze tuition or not. They had an agreement on that, and then I'm told that some of the universities just pitched a fit about it, especially Wichita State.
Right.
So, you know, it's difficult.
Right. So when we come back, are we going to be totally – it's 100% focused on the budget when they come back at the end of month, right? Mm-hmm.
I would imagine so. I mean, that's the big thing they still have left to tackle.
Oh, I hope they're not going to do any more stuff than that. I think they've done enough. Yeah.
And I want to talk a little bit about the transparency issue, about not just for legislators, but I think it has been a little bit more of a difficult session to cover, because it's hard to get information. What are your thoughts on that? No? Yes?
I mean, I think one of the real challenges, I mean, you see this across the country. There are fewer State House reporters right now than there ever have been. And, you know, when there's a lot going on at the State House, a news organization might have one person. They might not even have a full-time person in Topeka. And as a result, you know, you can't be everywhere. You pick the committee hearing that looks the most interesting or the floor debate. It's just a challenge when there's not debate happening on bills, when there's not, you know, sound bites or information coming out of lawmakers. It's really hard. A lot of the times people don't want to talk, especially if there's kind of this attitude from party leadership that we're going to move this thing through quickly.
Actually, Sam, I actually don't think it's been a hard session to cover. I think there's enough dissent in the legislature that the unhappy people are very happy to speak to the media. I also think Topeka has a really good press corps covering the Kansas legislature right now, so some really strong reporters. It would help if they would start live streaming their committee hearings so we could listen in on them remotely and figure out what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, there's I think they're live streaming out of a couple of committee rooms over there, or at least they're testing it out. I mean, but there has been some there has been some talk about that, and it's not like we don't have the it's not like they have to reinvent the technology to figure that out. Steve, yet. Mm-hmm.
Well, and Kansas just in general is a very difficult state to report on government. I mean, the work I do relies a lot on open records requests, and the traditional practice in Kansas is let's charge them as much as we can. You know, let's say you request something, they'll have a lawyer look at it. Some state agency will have one of their lawyers look at it, charge you $250 an hour. It'll take them 9 hours, they say. And that cost is prohibitive for a lot of news organizations to pay for documents, which is a pretty substantial portion of the work that a lot of journalists do.
When did that happen, by the way? You know, Kansas, when they first passed the Open Meetings and Open Records Act, was a real leader in sort of that transparency. So when did this happen?
I've noticed it just in the last since 2008, 2009 is sort of the feeling I got when, you know, those charges were starting to come back. I cover a lot of development incentives. That's a area of interest of mine. And for me, it started when I was trying to find out how much that money they were spending on the PEAK program, the Promoting Employment mm-hmm. Across Kansas, which is a common tool that they use to get businesses in Missouri to move to Kansas. And, you know, they said it would take hours for them to research. And I think for something you do every day, that should be on somebody's desktop, a spreadsheet just outlining what the spend is on this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Should and Sam Brownback isn't the most transparent governor either.
We just talked about his rare news conference.
His rare news conference, his refusal to disclose finalists for judicial positions, county commissioner positions, appointments that he makes, things like that. Mm-hmm. He keeps a lot close to the vest.
Just a couple quick things before we wrap up here. I want to get your thoughts on they've passed legislation that will put into law some new restrictions on folks who get TANF, which is sort mm-hmm. of general welfare, we used to call it,
yes.
SNAP, food stamps. Well, do you think that they wanted to get that the gun issue, get all that out of the way before they come back to tackle the real what I would think their real job is, and that is to come up with a balanced budget?
Yeah, definitely.
Mm. Steve?
Yeah, I think you do feel like with some of the and that's not really like a traditional social issue. But some of the things around the periphery of the budget are things that have gotten squared away. Some of the gun legislation and things like that they've gotten done before the spring break. But so I don't know how much there's going to be left for them to do outside of the budget, and how much time or energy they'll have to do anything besides the budget from here on out.
Right. And do we agree with Barb that we don't think this is going to be a 90-day session? Do you think there's too much to do, so much disagreement that we're going to be running into, you know, May, June, July? What do we think?
I mean, if they wrap it up in May, that would. Perhaps be an area of concern if they really rush to get this done, considering the lack of progress they've made so far.
You know, it's funny though. I think they used to call what's coming up the veto session, just to come back and talk about, you know, see if they need to overturn any of the governor's vetoes. And then they started calling it the wrap-up session, you know, implying that they just come back for a few days and wrap things up. And now it's all like, oh, it could go on forever. You know, it's like a whole second session.
Right. Yeah. All right. Final any final thoughts before we wrap up here? Do we how am I going to ask this? I want to know how they did. I want to know how the Kansas legislature did. Is there something that we expected to come out that didn't? Did this follow a pattern that we pretty much expected to happen? Final thoughts on this?
Depends on, you know, what your perspective is. If you're a conservative Republican with a robust agenda, you did great. You got that gun bill passed. You got the welfare thing passed. You got school financing passed. I mean, it was very monumental first half of the session from that perspective.
Yeah. Steve?
I mean, you know, with the big issues, like, of course, as we've talked about the budget, they haven't made as much progress as you might ordinarily expect. But it is probably the most vexing budget that they've had to pass. I mean, certainly, arguably, since 2008 when the economy started to crash. So, you know, how did they do? Well, they haven't done as much as you might ordinarily expect, but they have more on their plates than they ordinarily would.
Yeah. Ellie, final thought here.
You know, I feel like if you're a Johnson County voter, the people who put in a lot of these moderate Republicans into office, the ones who really care about public education and are really concerned about what the future is going to look like for Kansas schools with a big budget deficit, I think there's definitely some concerns about how they're progressing and what effect those are going to have, you know, on your kid's school.
Yep. All right, Barb Shelley from The Star, thanks. Steve Vockrott from The Pitch, my colleague Ellie Moxley. Now, we usually end with the guest's favorite song, but since you're all guests today, we're going to go around the table, you're going to tell me your favorite tune, and then I'm going to decide, Barb Shelley.
Oh, well, I hadn't given this much thought, but I would say Me and Bobby McGee by Janis Joplin.
Ooh, early favorite. Steve Vockrott?
Okay. I would say Teenage Riot by Sonic Youth.
Not a bad choice, but I think Barb is still in the lead. Ellie Moxley.
Won't Back Down, Tom Petty.
Ooh, this is tough, but me and Bobby McGee, my favorite. That's how we're going to roll out of the show.
Yes.
Show is produced by Matt Hodapp. You can subscribe to State House Blend on iTunes. Find us on KCUR.org. Our friends over there on Up to Date with Steve Kraske make a little room for us at Tuesdays at 11 a.m. And what the hell? Go ahead and follow me on the Twitter. I'm at Sam Zeff. That's State House Blend. We'll see you next time.
I pulled my harpoon out of my dirty red bandana. I was playing soft while Bobby sang the blues. Windshield wipers slapping time. Bobby's standing man. We sang every song that Javi knew.